All right, this is lecture number 13 in our course on ethics. We're still dealing with government issues. We're going to be doing that for the remainder of the time. We're going to talk about nuclear disarmament. Remember, we already talked about the just war criteria. Now we'll be talking about nuclear disarmament, pros and cons of that, and then we'll be talking about the freedoms of speech and religion. We're going to have two more classes, this class plus the next one, and if we get everything done here, then the last class will just be question and answer, and so we'll work it like that, because I don't think it's going to take the entire amount of time. Before we move on, though, that when we were talking about war, because this will show up on the test, remember the three options: activism, pacifism, and then selectivism. Now, activism says that every war declared by your government is right. Okay? So that's the activist position. The pacifist position is war is never right. And then selectivism is the view that there are some wars that are just. And that obviously is the correct view. I mean, God, just the fact that God ordered some wars in the Old Testament means that some wars are just. But to take the activist position and act like every war called by your government is right goes way too far. And the pacifist position that no wars are right would make King David a horribly evil man, not a man after God's own heart. So keep those three options when it comes to war in mind. But that's it. We covered the just war criterion last week, and we'll just leave it at that. Now we need to talk about nuclear disarmament. There's basically four different options here. There's unilateral disarmament. To write this on the board. Unilateral disarmament. It used to be a big thing in this area during the Cold War. There's MAD, which is mutually assured destruction. There's a bilateral disarmament. And then there is nuclear defense. Okay. Let's take a look at unilateral disarmament first. There used to be a Catholic Archbishop, Raymond Hunhausen, that was up in this area. He kept getting in trouble with the Vatican. Not for this view, though. The Catholic Church didn't mind his view that he taught that the United States should unilaterally cut back. I challenged him to a debate, was able to talk to his face. They had me talk to his secretary, then some Jesuit priest under him, and some other priest. And I never did talk to him, but I didn't have a big enough name for them to debate. Or him to debate me is what it was. But he thought that the USA should unilaterally disarm itself and that this would further the cause of world peace. Now, in one of his speeches, I sent away for his speeches, and I read several of his speeches. A lot of good information, by the way, about him in that book, A Fighting Chance, The Moral Use of Nuclear Weapons by Joseph P. Martino, published by Ignatius Press. This guy was a former colonel in the Air Force, retired Air Force colonel, and he was also a Catholic and very well read.
Joseph Martino, not Al Martino?
Yeah, I made a mistake when I said Al. Al is probably his brother.
But, moral use of his brother?
Yeah. But that is, it's a fighting chance, the moral use of nuclear weapons. Another good book is How to Make Nuclear Weapons Obsolete by Robert Jastrow. He does a great job explaining Star Wars defense and why it will work if we just use the technology that we had back in the 80s. So that's a really good book as well. But anyway, he argued, Archbishop Raymond Hunhausen, in one of his speeches that he gave, I believe it was a speech that he gave at Notre Dame. He gave several speeches at Notre Dame. In one of them, he argued that if we unilaterally disarm, which is what he recommends, we would probably be taken over. This is during the time of the Cold War, when the old Soviet Union was still in full swing. He said that if we unilaterally cut back, the Soviet Union would probably take us over, but we should still do it for the cause of world peace, and that would further the cause of world peace by us being taken over by the Soviet Union. A refutation of this would be that turning the strongest free nation in the world into a wimp does not further the cause of world peace. Let me repeat that. Turning the strongest free nation in the world into a wimp does not further the cause of world peace. Okay? Point number two, the weaker a nation is, the more it invites invasion. I don't know if Archbishop Raymond Hunhausen really understands. Wouldn't make much of a general. Then again, he didn't make much of a priest either. And it was, this guy fought abortion. I was glad for that. But he was also taught that homosexuals could be good Catholics. And that's what got him in trouble with the Pope. The weaker a nation is, the more it invites invasion. Now, Hunhausen would agree. But he would say,
he would say the invasion's okay.
Yeah, so be it. Because you never oppose an evil empire. You just, you're a pacifist. You just never fight at all. So, and then also dictatorships have killed more people this century than wars, than all the wars of mankind put together. And I'm not just talking about the wars that dictatorships get themselves involved in. Jane Fonda said that we should pull out of Vietnam and stop the killing. We pulled out of Vietnam, but it didn't stop the killing. The killing probably increased 100-fold. Millions were slaughtered. The nicest thing you can do to a communist nation is invade them, because then they arm their people and their people have a chance of defending themselves. But when a communist nation is not at war, what it does is it turns to its unarmed public and it starts slaughtering everybody who's not politically correct, and then they have no means to protect themselves. So dictatorships have killed more people this century than all the wars of mankind put together. That's unilateral disarmament. Another view is mutually assured destruction. Remember, Hunhausen is unilateral disarmament. Mutually assured destruction, it was Jimmy Carter. Well, Jimmy Carter held to, and there was lots of guys who held to this view besides Carter. It was a balance of power. He believed that both the United States of America and the old Soviet Union should be powerful enough to blow each other up, to blow this planet up multiple times, and then cities should be targeted as threats. And then by doing that, Carter believed, well, then the Russians will never push buttons and start a nuclear confrontation with us, because they know if they push buttons on us, we'll push buttons on them, and we'll wipe each other, both of us will be wiped out. Okay? The problem with this is that if bluff fails, your choice is either suicide or surrender. You got about, 30 minutes before all these warheads are crashing in on you, and you got 30 minutes to decide whether you're going to just surrender or commit suicide by just pushing all your buttons, because then they're going to send more. See, the first thing that the Soviets would hit us in a nuclear strike, they would hit military targets. Then, with the way Carter was leading us, our only choice would be to take out Russian cities, civilians. Then, in a response to our counter, the Soviet Union would then push buttons to target our cities. So our choice would either be surrender or suicide if our bluff is called. Now, the thing is, the problem here, one of the main problems, the United States values its citizens more than the Soviet Union. What's even more important is the United States values the Soviet Union's citizens even more than the Soviet Union. Okay? So, it's not a real defense. Deterrent does not equal defense. Deterrent is a bluff. If you do this, I'm going to do that. It's a bluff. If they call your bluff, you really don't have a defense. Again, this situation, it's either suicide or surrender, but that's not a real defense. A real defense is, if you try something, good luck. You're not going to accomplish your goals. I've got a defense. And then we're going to whoop the tar out of you. In other words, you can try to mess with us. A defense is like being stronger than your enemy. If your enemy starts a fight with you, you finish it. Deterrent, you pretend to be so strong that you're either going to win that fight if your enemy starts it, or you're going to fight to a tie, so it's not going to be worth it. But in actuality, it's just a big bluff. Okay? So there's definitely problems there. The Soviet Union is willing to sacrifice millions of its own citizens to further communism, and they probably wouldn't mind taking a few nukes if they thought they could have won a nuclear war. But that's the mutually assured destruction. It's a bluff, and it only works if nobody calls your bluff. Somebody calls your bluff, then Carter would either have to decide to kill innocent Russian citizens or just to surrender and let them take us over.
What was the name on the United Arm of the first name?
John, if you will not listen, I won't repeat it. Archbishop Raymond Hunthausen. I know that you probably just want to start writing some letters here on this dynamite stuff. Huh?
Raymond who?
Hunthausen.
Hunthausen.
Good name for a pacifist. Hunthausen.
Isn't that you said the shirt the destruction, isn't that still thought of, isn't that still used today in a lot of our millions of other countries?
Right now, I don't think, if you ask me what's this administration's policy, I don't think they have one. I'm not going to mention any names, but for those listening to the cassettes, this is 1994, so look up in your history book and find out who's president doing that. But this administration doesn't have a policy. Ronald Reagan, we're going to get to Ronald Reagan's policy in a little while here. Tell you though, the head of the Joint Chiefs, what do they call the
guy?
Yeah, whatever. He gave a speech to the graduates of the academy, and his basic message was, North Korea, if they do have nuclear potential, they've also been building tremendously in the conventional areas. They are tough to reckon with, and he also said, don't count the old Soviet Union out. And that's a really good point. This administration is acting on, number one, they don't give credit to Ronald Reagan and George Bush for winning the Cold War, but then number two, they act like it's been totally done and that's a thing of the past, and not necessarily so. They still got all these nukes, and it wouldn't take a whole lot for some dictator to pull everything together. There's a lot of turmoil over there. The communists could be coming back to power, or some other dictator could come in, reunite the old Soviet Union, more of a threat than the old Soviet Union. They'd probably be more of a threat than the old Soviet Union, because the old Soviet Union would calculate the risk before doing something. Some of the kooks that are out there right now probably won't calculate the risk. They might just be willing to push buttons.
But we can get rid of two permanent generals here recently. Colin Howland. It starts off with Waller. And Waller is a my commanding officer was apparently a man of real tact. And speaking, and they were asking what he thought about Russia, about the way of disarmament, about the way we disarmed ourselves. And he said that he thought that Anderson said that we had to do that.
You got some good guys in Congress, but there's a few of them. But Newt Gingrich, if you ever listen to Newt Gingrich talk, Newt Gingrich has really got his head on straight. He recognizes there's still a plausible threat of the Soviet Union and rejoining together. But mutually assured destruction doesn't work. It's only a bluff. There's another view. Now, bilateral disarmament, this is probably the closest thing that this present administration would hold to. Bilateral disarmament, you know, the present administration, liberals in this country believe that pouring a whole mess of money into the military is a waste of money, and we could spend that money to feed the hungry, to shelter the poor, and the problem with that is the church's job to do those things is the government's job to protect our rights and our freedoms. In other words, military, law enforcement, judicial system, that is the government's job. So what the liberals are saying is when they talk about reinventing government, what they're really talking about is redefining government not as something that protects you and your rights, but redefining it as something that trusts all the other nations on earth, wants a one world government, and believes that man is evolving to the point where no longer we're going to have war, and so we can take all our money now and throw it at these people that are too lazy to get jobs.
The land is going to lie down with the lion and be surprised and get gored.
Yeah. So, but bilateral disarmament says that both the United States of America and the Soviet Union should just agree to cut back. Now, Ronald Reagan would do this only when he was in the driver's seat and he would demand verification. Verification is often difficult, especially when you deal with a government like the old Soviet Union. By the way, this whole chapter, I thought of just removing this whole lecture because it just doesn't apply today, or it doesn't seem like it applies today. But the fact is, it may apply tomorrow. All it takes is just the wrong guy to get the reins of power in Russia and reunify the old Soviet Union. No one's written a book how to go from communism, from two generations of communism to capitalism. We've had two generations. Imagine growing up without being able to dream. Growing up, never dreaming about someday owning your own house. Never being able to dream about owning your own job, having your own business, owning your own business. So you got two generations of no dreaming. And now all of a sudden, the entrepreneurs are supposed to come out of the woodwork and create jobs. It's just not happening. The only guys over there that are really succeeding right now in general are the guys that had their own businesses before, which means they're in the black market. They were doing it illegally. They're the only guys that are making any money. So,
and the Americans have gone over that.
Rory just lost 2 points in your grade for bad comedy. You know. There's always a risk involved with a joke during a class. If the joke bombs and the teacher doesn't like it, points will. But we do have a. Farriston does have a lenient extra credit policy. So it's $25 per point, so for extra credit there. All right, bilateral disarmament. Reputation of a verification is difficult, and the Soviet Union has a history of violating treaties. In fact, there's some that have effectively argued that there's never been a treaty that they signed that they held to. They violated every treaty they ever made. That was the old Soviet Union. Also, other countries are gaining nuclear technology. I wrote this thing down about 2 years ago, and now look at all this emphasis on. Is Saddam Hussein, does he have the ability to build nuclear warheads? And what about North Korea? Now North Korea is in focus there. And the day is going to come. This is why I was so adamant in arguing for Star Wars. The day is going to come when Muammar Gaddafi is going to have nuclear warheads. I mean, when this guy throws a tantrum, he's going to take out, you know, 250,000 people in one pot. Anyway... I don't think any of these three work. You can do a little bit of bilateral disarmament, but you've got to be in the driver's seat. Robert Jasher, in his book, How to Make Nuclear Weapons Obsolete, he wants the bilateral disarmament, but that's after the Star Wars defense. With the technology we had in the early 80s, we could have a Star Wars defense where only two out of every 1,000 warheads would slip through. Or, only two out of every 1,000 would slip through. 99.8, it's a four-tier defense, and four to five get destroyed through the first one. And these are conservative figures, by the way. Four to five through the next stage, four to five through the next, four to five through the last. You end up only two out of 1,000 coming through. Which means, for us to be on par with the Soviet Union, if we had that defense in effect, what we have to do is we can cut out 998 out of every 1,000 of our warheads if we wanted to. We would not have to spend as much money as they would have been. In the beginning, you'd have to spend a lot of money, but after that, it would pay off in the long run, and you would basically make nuclear weapons obsolete because we would be able to... Look, when somebody invents the sword, somebody else has got to invent the shield, and that's what the Star Wars defense does. Anyway, Ronald Reagan recognized that a deterrent is not a defense. Bilateral disarmament, you got to trust your enemy. That's not a real good policy. Mutually assured destruction, you're left with, if somebody calls your bluff, you're left with a suicide or surrender decision. That's not a good way to protect your people. And unilateral disarmament is basically saying we're just going to submit to our enemies, and that's not a good option. The God instituted human. I don't care what Hunthausen said. Hunthausen's. Sometimes the Bible talks to the government. Sometimes the Bible talks to Christians. Hunthausen can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
With all the learning that this guy's got, it is the government's job to protect your people from invading nations. Archbishop Raymond Hunthausen. For you to say, well, what Hunthausen's view was, the typical liberal view, they try to get the government to stop being the government and stop protecting people, and they try to get the government to start playing the church. And it just does not work. I was arguing with a guy yesterday, it was a mellow argument, we talked politics all day. I got to meet with a guy who's running for the State House of Representatives, and we got to meet with I don't know if the guy's a state senator or a state representative from we're on the boondocks, the other side of the Hood Canal and stuff. But during our discussion, one of the guys who's a conservative said that to stop crime, we need not only to punish the criminals, but we need to educate the public. And I interrupted him. I said, that's the church's job, that's the parents' job, that's not the government's job to get into this education stuff. That kind of education stuff, whenever the government takes that over, number one, it's not cost effective, and number two, you know, all this money gets caught up in the, and tied up in the bureaucracy, and then number two, they always start teaching something stupid. Look, right now, the government's getting into business of teaching the birds and the bees. So in some public schools, they're teaching when your mate urinates on your face, keep your eyes and your mouth shut. That's not safe sex. So if that's the way the government educates, I don't want them educating thugs how not to be criminals. It's not their job to reform that 16-year-old kid that shoots at somebody. It's their job either to throw him in prison or to put him to death if he killed somebody. But the government should be the government. It should protect the people and their rights. And then it should allow the church to educate people and allow the church to do all these nice things and feed the hungry. It's the church's job to share the gospel message of Christ plus compassion, and then to teach others how to live godly lives. It's the government's job to bring God's wrath on the evildoer, whether he's in the society or whether it's another nation, and to punish the evildoer to protect the innocent man's rights and to keep order. And when the government tries to do everything else, look out. And by the way, the more the government does, the more money it needs. The more money it needs, the more it taxes you, and the more it taxes you, the more it must control you. The more your money that goes to the government, the more they control you. And that's a very dangerous thing. The Bible teaches a limited form of government, something that the present administration needs to learn. Nuclear defense, that's the view of Ronald Reagan. What it basically means is Ronald Reagan's policy was he was trying to prepare to win a nuclear war. Doesn't mean he wanted to start one. But he wanted to prepare to win a nuclear war if necessary. If we got hit first, we could still win. Now, in order to prepare, by the way, Ronald Reagan, before a press conference, he talked into the mics, and he said they wanted him to test the microphones. Well, what did he say?
I just signed legislation that outlaws Russia forever, and the bombing begins in 5 minutes.
Yeah. The bombing begins in 5 minutes, and they're going to nuke Russia. Now, does Ronald Reagan ever trust the press?
No.
No. Was the press, were the press ever his friends?
No.
Okay. The only possibility about that is that Ronald Reagan, he was either so senile that he said it not knowing they would report it, or he wasn't senile and he wanted it reported. In other words, there's a good possibility that Ronald Reagan knew that the Reagan Doctrine had put the Soviet Union so much, put the United States in so much of the, put us in the driver's seat to where then he was basically wanted a message to go out. He knew the liberal reporters were going to betray America and broadcast this so Russia would find out about it. But he wanted to send a message to Russia: we are not afraid of you.
Right.
We are the most powerful nation on earth right now. You had your chance, but Carter's not in office anymore. Carter had a different way of doing things, a different way of thinking. Didn't mind cobwebs on our bomber planes and the whole nine yards. So Reagan said, "No, we're in the driver's seat. We're in control, and we can make jokes like this. And if you're getting a little bit nervous, you better get with our program." Now, Ronald Reagan would never. I had a debate with a protester about this on trial. A protester I had arrested when I worked with Subbase Police. And it was in trial in Tacoma, and the guy was arguing about the United States does not have our policy is we will not use nuclear weapons as a first strike, but we do have a first use policy. What that means is we will not push buttons to start a nuclear war. At the same time, if Russia did something conventionally that we thought was a big threat to the safety of ourselves and the rest of the world, then we might use nuclear weapons first. But that's different than a nuclear strike, which is not preempted in any way. But there were certain areas where the conventional Soviet forces were in such power that some of our interests could be lost if we did not respond through a first use of nuclear weapons. But Ronald Reagan was just sending a message out there. But anyway, in order to prepare to win a nuclear war, Reagan knew that we needed smaller and more accurate nuclear weapons. So three things about the nuclear weapons: they got to be smaller, they've got to be more accurate, and they've got to be mobile. I didn't realize it. That's an acronym, SAM. Smaller, accurate, and mobile. Okay. Reason being, if they're smaller, you make them smaller, you got less radiation fallout, okay? There's less loss of innocent life, okay? When you hit a military target, you can take out the military target. You don't have to worry about taking out the military target, plus the five cities that surround it, plus the 50 suburbs that surround that, plus the farmlands after that, and you end up killing a million people when all you wanted was one little small military target that you wanted to hit. So less fallout, less loss of innocent life. So you want them smaller. You want them more accurate. You want them to be able to hit strategic military targets. Are you listening, Jimmy Carter? You want them to be able to hit strategic military targets, not cities. Okay? So, you know, you want to, if there's a strategic bridge where they need to move some of these missiles that are being produced into a certain area, you want to be able to blow up one little tiny bridge in the Soviet Union. Now, we've got some guys here that work on submarines or have worked on submarines or are in the Navy and know enough about this to tell you how accurate these things can get. The technology is amazing. Robert Jasper's book is outdated already, but all he knew was the 1980s technology, but it was amazing even then. They've kind of got like a built-in map, the smart bullet technology. We would be well beyond that. But even with the smart bullet technology, they'll have like a map. So if you're aiming at the middle finger of my hand, that's, and then here comes the smart bomb, and it's off target. Well, it's got the identical map in its computer and its quote unquote thinking capacity. What it does is it moves it, it makes the correction, it moves it in whatever way so that they overlap perfectly, and it almost delivers the thing to a doorstep thousands of miles away.
We saw it during the Gulf War, the footage of flying missiles in through people through windows, you know.
Yeah. So the technology is there. Ronald Reagan was saying, look, let's make them smaller, less fallout, less loss of innocent life, and make them more accurate, these nuclear weapons, so that they're able to hit strategic military targets, not cities. We don't want this big radiation thing that Russia, if you start pushing buttons and hit some of our military targets, we're going to turn around and destroy every man, woman, and child. So again, that's not the way to do it. Yeah.
I know that some of those strategic military targets in the old Soviet Union were surrounded by dense populated areas just for protection.
Yeah.
What would you do in that case?
Yeah. Read Martino's book. It's all in the ethics of warfare. It's just like when Ronald Reagan, you're not allowed, Congress made against the law for him to assassinate somebody like Muammar Gaddafi, a leading terrorist government official. So what he did was he got intelligence reports that he's supposedly in the tent in this terrorist compound, and so Ronald Reagan leveled the whole thing. Ollie North was the guy who drew up the plan, the 11 minutes of hell that they rained on Tripoli, and but they actually literally blew up the tent where they thought Gaddafi was. But Gaddafi wasn't there. But supposedly one of his kids was. Yeah, so they killed the kid. Whose fault is that? It's the jackass who lets his kid live in the military target. But I'll tell you this. The sword cuts both ways. The sword cuts both ways. If there was a nuclear exchange between us and the old Soviet Union, and thousands upon thousands of women and children were killed because Bangor got hit because of the housing at Bangor and the houses right around. Whose fault is it? It's our fault. What in the world are we putting housing in a military, in one of the, probably the number two, probably the number two military target. Well, when you read Martino's book, in America. Yeah.
Well, why do you house
Kings Bay, Georgia?
Entire Western Pacific fleet in one thing, yeah. Puget Sound, where it takes 12 hours to get out by aircraft carrier and surrounded by a cruiser.
So, but he wanted to be able to hit strategic military targets, not cities. And then he wanted to keep them there. Now remember, they're smaller, they're more accurate, less fallout, but he wanted to keep them mobile as well. Why? What's the first thing in a nuclear first strike? What's the first thing that you hit?
Nuclear weapons.
Because payback can hurt. So, in a nuclear first strike, you're going to take out as many weapons as you can. What does that mean? It means some nuclear submarines that are in port, because they may not be able to locate them out there in the water. Now, science is advancing a lot there, and I think it's questionable how much the Soviets do know and how much we do know. And there's ways, the technology, we're coming closer to technology to basically light up the seas, so we'll know everything that's in there. We're coming closer and closer to that. So, but at this point, it appears that the biggest targets would be like the nuclear subs in port, which would make Bangor and Kings Bay, Georgia, the two number one targets. two number ones. The number one and number two. Number one and number two targets. Sounds like boxing. We got this guy's the middleweight champ. I thought he was the middleweight champ. Well, they both are, and those other two guys as well. WBA, WBC, IBF. But
the East Coast and West Coast number one target.
So this first strike, you've got, if you've got smaller, more mobile nuclear weapons where they're constantly being moved, you cannot target them as easily as you would. For instance, once you load up a nuclear sub and you send it off to sea, it's no longer a stationary target. Okay? But another thing, the way these things are set up, what do you do if you're a nuclear sub and the Soviets don't know where you are, and it's the old Soviet Union coming back into power, and they decide to hit the United States with a first strike, okay? What are you going to do if you're in a nuclear sub and you get the order to fire back? Are you going to come out of the water and fire one warhead?
Throw them off.
Then throw them off. Why? If you throw, once you throw one, you give up your location, okay? Now, if you've got a whole mess left, so that makes you a target. However, if you let them all fly, and there's a lot of, in one Trident sub, there is an awful lot of devastation. I think there's enough in one Trident sub to destroy every major Soviet city.
Yeah. There's 10 warheads in each missile that have capabilities of carrying 24, and one warhead.
Were the United States Navy to possess nuclear weapons, that would be true.
I said capability.
But since they're not being leaked with those missiles.
Now that you've all heard that, my snap is But once you let one go, you got to let them all go, because by letting them all go, then you're no longer a target.
Well, you're still going to be a target, but at least this way you have not lost all the weapons.
Yeah, not only that, though, unless you go and... It's like, get even with these bunch of Navy guys at one sub. If they blew up Kings Bay, Georgia, and they blow up Bangor, why in the world would they waste their time taking out a sub that just got rid of it. You got no place to rearm.
That's
right. So not only those weapons can't be destroyed, but even to save the lives of the guys aboard, you'd want to get them all out. So we got the whole system had been set up until Ronald Reagan came on the scene. That one big bluff. You hit our military targets, we wipe out your cities. And Ronald Reagan said that's not the way to go, because then you got to choose to either surrender or suicide and to kill innocents. And Ronald Reagan said, no, I want to have the ability. So they hit us with a first strike. We destroy most of those missiles coming our way. And then we turn around and basically turn them militarily and economically into a third world country. Now, economically, what I'm getting at is you destroy all the major bridges or whatever. Not only military targets, but anything. It takes a strong economy to build a strong military. And so there's all kinds of indirectly created. Another thing, too, is what about the guys, innocent guys that work in a factory making nuclear weapons or making things that go into them? They are a legitimate military target to take out that factory.
Once you become part of the military machine, no matter what your role is, you become part of it.
I remember when I was now, someone did fire on one of our military bases. I was in the Middle East. We retaliated from the buildings tonight, but nobody was in. What was our retaliation? We did actually kill one.
Oh, we killed the gander.
I want to put that in the proper context so I don't freak out people on it, because that you're not talking about a nuclear exchange, though. But that showed the difference in our way of thinking about innocent life. We try to go out of the way not to kill innocents. But they need to be nuclear weapons. The Ronald Reagan Doctrine of Nuclear Defense, preparing to win a nuclear war if one is necessary. Smaller and more accurate nuclear missiles that are mobile, so there'd be less fallout, less loss of innocent life, able to hit strategic military targets in a single bound. No, able to hit strategic, able to hit strategic military targets, not cities. And then more, they'd be more mobile, so they wouldn't be easy to target. Also, the neutron bomb fits into this. A lot of people say, that's a disgusting bomb. Who would ever think of creating a horrible bomb that wouldn't even knock a vase off a shelf but would kill all life in the area? Who would think that? A military genius would. Supposing Israel gets invaded. They wouldn't want us dropping the normal nuclear bombs. However, if Israel asked us to, I wouldn't doubt that we'd probably drop a few neutron bombs. Now, there is a passage in Ezekiel when Israel gets invaded by what appears to be Russia to the north, Magog and Rosh, and when they get invaded, it takes 7 months to bury the dead bodies of the invading forces from the north, but they're not talking about burying too many Israelis. So there might even be, it is a possibility that fire and brimstone from heaven could be, the Lord could use somebody like the United States of America to drop a neutron bomb, but that's debatable, but it is a possibility. But if we or any of our allies were invaded, you can use that, and it wouldn't destroy, the radiation is very low, I think it's only 3 or 4 days before you can come out of basically mild fallout shelters. By the way, if people think the Soviet Union weren't gearing up for a first strike, they're crazy. I mean, these guys were building their subways. They were literally airtight and like 1,000 feet under the ground. I mean, you can't get any better fallout shelters. I mean, what really, if we unleashed everything we had at one point in the 80s on the Soviet Union, 85% of their public would survive the initial bombardment. Now, a lot of them are going to die from the radiation later. With America, it's almost the exact opposite. If Russia unleashed everything, only about 15% of our public, other than Washington, other than the Pentagon, there's not too many areas where, you know, our fallout shelters
are all going to fall down.
Forget it. The fallout shelters, it's a joke. Anyway, the neutron bombs, if we, our allies, are invaded. And then Ronald Reagan also wanted, as part of the nuclear defense, the Star Wars defense, which would be a true defense against the first strike. Somebody invents this sword, we need to invent the shield. Remember I said Robert Jastrow talked about a four-tier system. He, by the way, founded the Goddard Institute of Space Studies at NASA. And he said that with the Star Wars defense system, by the way, all the experts that have been working on it for years at Los Alamos, they said it could work. All the guys that say that it can't work, Jasper refutes all their arguments.
It what?
The guys that, what?
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, but normally you could tell how a scientist is going to say whether it will work or not by how he votes, whether he's liberal or conservative. But in a four-tier system, you have like four different checkpoints, pretty much, as satellites and all, but four different checkpoints. They try to catch them when our satellites pick them up coming out of their launch pads or whatever you call them, or your silos. And they get 4 out of 5 at each one. That's just conservative figures. Jasper thinks they can do a lot better than that. But when it's 4 out of 5 at each tier, and there's 4 tiers, you end up with only 2 missiles out of every 1,000 getting through. So I really recommend that book, How to Make Nuclear Weapons Obsolete, by Robert Jastrow, as well as A Fighting Chance, The Moral Use of Nuclear Weapons, by Joseph P. Martino. And once you have nuclear weapons, once you have the technology, even if there were no nuclear weapons, the ethical thing to do would be to try to invent. It's just like when somebody comes up with gas, you try to invent the gas mask. When there's an offensive weapon, you've got to try to come up with a way to defend it. And yes, this would eventually be getting to satellite warfare. Their satellites trying to shoot our satellites at, but that's all part of the war game. It's trying to get the advantage on your enemy. And war, as technology advances, war technology is going to advance. And we better get with the program one of these days, despite the fact the present administration doesn't want to go that way. But nuclear defense, that is the stance I would take for the nuclear disarmament debate. Don't disarm. The strongest free nation in the world should be the strongest nation on earth and should enforce peace through its strength. We should mainly protect our own interests at the same time. We don't need to be the policemen of the whole earth, but if there are some human rights violations that are really horrible going on somewhere, we might have to talk it out. And if it's possible, the just war criteria comes in. If we can go in and get a job done and get out, it might be something we might want to do. It all depends.